This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to the Rainbow Report. News, opinion, current affairs for the Rainbow community. From Joy 94.9, Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. And now, your host, Doug Pollard.
Well, many thanks to Chris and Cam for the Drive Factory. Good evening and welcome to what I hope is a somewhat smarter Rainbow Report tonight. As we've said on the show several times, it's smart to conserve our history, if only because in the past we've been so often written out. And one of the most important parts of that history is our AIDS memorial quilt. James Rendell, Lord Abbot of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence of the Abbey of the Black Swan and Vice Chair of People Living with HIV AIDS Western Australia, will join us later to explain the sad story of how the West Australian portion of the quilt may have got damaged by some not-so-smart treatment. From history to the future, and what is our future if not our children? The Pinnacle Foundation provides mentoring and scholarship to smart LGBTI students in need of help. Till now, they've been strong in New South Wales, but rather less so here in Melbourne. But they're about to change all that, and the man in charge of that is Bodan Abrat. He joins us later. We'd all like life to be simple, I think, with as little complication as possible. So when the idea of HIV prevention through the use of antiretroviral drugs came along, most of us jumped at it. On the surface, it looked like a very smart idea. But unfortunately, HIV isn't the only sexually transmitted disease out there, and that single pill a day won't protect against any of them. Take, for example, gonorrhea. Once it was no big deal, but new strains that are resistant to all treatments are coming along. We're going to have to get smarter about them. Professor Kit Fairley of the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre will explain. And this is your host, Doug Pollard. Now, just when you thought sex was getting safer, along come a whole host of new nasties to spoil your dinner. We've spoken before about the sudden emergence of meningitis in the New York and LA gay communities, about HPV, the human papillomavirus, which is now being linked to throat cancer thanks to the rise of oral sex. And now there's drug-resistant gonorrhea, which is also linked to oral sex. And about this last, we want to know if we should be worried. Professor Kit Fairley is the person to ask, and he's on the line now. Good evening, Professor.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Now, should we be worried about this drug-resistant gonorrhea?
We should be worried about gonorrhea because it gives you nasty symptoms and has some complications and can increase your risk of catching HIV. The prospect of untreatable gonorrhea is not really the issue. It's just going to become more difficult to treat.
Mm-hmm. So I understand we were kind of running out of antibiotics that it didn't have resistance to.
That's right. So gonorrhea is a really clever bug. It exists in the throat and grabs bits of genetic material that allows it to be resistant to different antibiotics. So from the very beginning in the late 30s, early 40s, when sulfonamides and penicillin and then a series of other antibiotics were used, gonorrhea became resistant to them. We've been using one for about nearly 10 years, I suppose, called ceftriaxone, and that's an injectable one. Mm-hmm. And the trouble is that gradually this bug is becoming slightly more resistant to it. Treatment failures, where it doesn't work, are exceedingly rare, but it is gradually becoming more resistant, and I suspect at some time in the future we'll need something else.
Part of the problem, as I understand it, is that you can have gonorrhea in your throat and not know it because it's relatively symptom-free.
That's exactly right. This is a very important point because in gay men, because they get gonorrhea in the throat and anus, which are typically asymptomatic, it's much, much harder to control than it is in a heterosexual relationship where it's just in the penis and presents within days of symptoms and can get treated. So that is the problem, and the solution's regular testing.
Now, there have been a lot of rather scary articles floating around the internet in the last few days. I remember seeing one saying, new gonorrhea could be worse than AIDS. Is this just journalistic scaremongering?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Well, that disposes of that one very nicely. Also, we remember back in the early days of AIDS, we were starting to be encouraged to use condoms for oral sex as well as for anal sex. Is that coming back onto the list of recommendations now?
It's obviously, if you'd like to prevent all sexually transmitted diseases, then you need to, or infections, you need to do it in a way that uses condoms for everything like that. But in reality, that's something that's not going to happen. The important thing is to use them for anal sex so you prevent HIV, which is much more serious than the others. So I don't think that it's a realistic prospect that people will use condoms for oral sex, and therefore we have to approach the control of gonorrhea different ways, and that way is to have frequent testing, particularly have lots of partners, because that means that you can identify the infection and get rid of it early.
Yeah, and it also means letting the testing people know that you are in fact gay and they need to test your throat and your anus.
That's right. In fact, you know, I think general practitioners have some of the hardest jobs in the world. They have to know a little bit of everything, and it's difficult for them to know all the different tests they have to do on all the different people. And so I think the gay community is incredibly informed from the perspective of health, and so in a way they can gently suggest, oh, last time I went, the doctor did a throat swab and an anal swab and a urine test, and the GP will say, oh, yes, that's right, yes, we'll do that.
Now, the other thing that I've been reading about lately is the human papillomavirus and links between that are being forged now in the latest research between that and incidences of throat cancer, esophageal cancer, Barrett's esophagus and various other throat and head and neck related cancers. Is that possibly another reason to consider using condoms for oral sex?
Yes, there's certainly true that in almost every country where it's been looked at, the incidence of throat cancer is rising. And it's the one that's rising is the one related to human papillomavirus infection. The one that's due to smoking and drinking is falling away in all countries. And that's probably because people begin more so now than they did perhaps 40 years ago, with oral sex as the first site of infection. And so you're seeing these fairly significant rises occurring. So how can you prevent that from happening if you're a young gay person coming out and starting their first sexual activity? Go and have the HPV vaccine.
Yep.
That's the key. That's an incredibly effective vaccine which prevents cancer from this virus. So it prevents anal cancer, throat cancer, penile cancer. So it's very important. And in fact, that's being rolled out in boys as we speak now. It's now available to boys and girls through schools.
Now, I want to bring in my co-host for the evening here, Mr. James Newbury, because he's like to ask you a question. James.
Kit, James Newbury here. I'm a bit concerned. Doc, you said that we don't have to worry about untreatable gonorrhea, but Dr. Arun Sevanvasan from the Centre of Disease Control seems to disagree with you.
So I didn't actually say we didn't have to worry about it. I said it's less important than HIV. Untreatable gonorrhea, if there is a stage in the future where it becomes totally untreatable, then that's obviously a very serious issue. But will it become untreatable this year or next year? No. What's happening is it's becoming increasingly resistant to one of the antibiotics. Eventually, like gonorrhea has become resistant to previous antibiotics, that antibiotic will no longer use, and we will need to find other ones to do that. In referring to that, I was really saying it's not like HIV.
The problem with that, as I understand it, is that nobody's actually developing any new antibiotics, are they?
Well, there are other antibiotics that we've used before that will work. But it's difficult to know what to use before the resistance happens in a way, because it may become resistant in a particular fashion that rules out some antibiotics and not others. It's not an unimportant issue. It is an important issue. And so for individuals, using condoms, if that's an appropriate thing that they can do, having frequent tests is important. At a community level, what we need to do is reduce antibiotic consumption, because what's happening is the gonorrhea bug is taking the bits of genetic material from other bacteria that have become resistant to the antibiotics that we've used for coughs and colds and other things. And the second thing we've got to do is control gonorrhea, which is about frequent testing and as less risk as possible.
Yeah, and I suppose the, one of the most important bits of information you could say is don't take it for granted that oral sex is safe, which a lot of completely safe, which a lot of people think it is.
That's a very important point. In fact, at Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, which is part of Alfred Health, we now see, for example, genital herpes most commonly acquired from oral sex. The first presentation of genital herpes is now from oral sex.
All right, well, thanks very much for all that, Kit, and thanks very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. All the best.
And to you. That was Professor Kit Fairley there from Melbourne Sexual Health. Well, looks like we are going to have to be a little more careful about oral sex than we have been up to now. I don't fancy the idea of using condoms, though, I must admit.
Well, if it's a choice between condoms and death, I think I'd rather read a book and go to bed alone.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're at the death stage yet.
I don't know. I'm not certain. I mean, I've heard things like 8041, which is this new, almost untreatable strain of gonorrhea, has had reported cases where it's killed within 5 days of infection. I know that those are...
It's been very, 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 very few, though. Less than 1%.
Yes, but I'm not certain that you want to take chances with a thing like that.
No, and as we say, if you have this, you're more susceptible to infection with HIV as well. If you have a valuable, historically important and emotionally significant and fragile artifact in your care, how should you look after it? That's a question I'd like to ask of James Rendell over in WA. Good evening, James.
Hello.
Now, the problem here is something seems to have happened with the AIDS quilt. Take me through the history of this. When was this quilt last given an airing?
It's been Candlelight Memorial last year. We'd had an inch of rain. It got wet then. And I said it's got to be laid out and dried. So I knew it was wet then. There's three segments of the quilt. There's two smaller sections. Now, the smaller section came out at World AIDS Day, and that was fine, but that's easy to dry. But it's the big piece that has not been out, and we wanted it for the memorial,
Now, which memorial is this?
The one coming up on the 19th of May.
That's the big candlelight memorial.
Yes, and Neil Buckley, who's the event coordinator, told the Friends of the secretary of the Friends of the AIDS Memorial Group. It was one of them because there's all this fuss about not being able to have the quilt. And so all these people have been asking, why can't we unfold the quilt and why...
Because it normally forms part of that ceremony, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does. It should. Because it's a... And we wanted to have people in... Michelle's Bologna, George Bologna, is wanted to have balloons and an unfolding ceremony, so we have all the kids and whoever else wants to be in white and read the names out, blah blah blah.
Yes.
And it was
so
we can't do that. We can't do that. We can't do that. So then
who's saying we can't do that?
The event coordinator,
right?
And
he is from.
That's Mother Greta.
Okay.
Neil Buckley, but he's an individual. He's been running it. But the point is, getting back to the quilt that's important is that he told, and WAC, I don't know, WAC haven't said...
WAC is Western Australia AIDS Council, right?
They've kind of refusing. They've gone into ground.
They have custody of this quilt, right?
Yes.
And they are not allowing it out for the candlelight ceremony.
Well, we're not sure because the... quite simply, they haven't answered the email to confirm it. I've had two 45-minute phone calls with them, and I'm waiting for someone from the AIDS Council to answer a letter to say what the condition is. We've had four or five people have contacted the AIDS Council in writing and to the board. The CEO's gone away until the 14th or something of May, and he can't be reached for any decisions, and there's no transparency in terms of confirming.
Okay. So what do you why do you suspect that it may have become damaged?
Well, because Mother Greta's usually right.
But we don't know Mother Greta.
Damaged. if the Arts Council's told Mother Greta, told the sisters, like, and it all makes sense because they didn't have it out at World AIDS Day.
Okay,
and
so...
All right, now you said, the other thing you said to me before we, in our emails before we went to air is that the AIDS Council are not storing it properly anyway. I think the phrase you used was, it was stuffed in a shed.
Well... Three people have described to me, and as a sister, they've said this when I've been in the habit, so it can't be confidential, is that they've used the term shed to
right.
describe it. Now, that's three or four people, including one who was a member of the Star AIDS Council.
You have pretty good evidence for saying, A, it's not been properly stored, and B, it's gotten damaged.
Well, I thought it was supposed to be in a museum. I mean, we ratted on all about this. We've heard this on your program before about the powerhouses problems.
Yes.
So it's that if the museum is that kind of careful of the rest of the quilt, the AIDS Council were given custodianship of it. But there seems to be this general buzz to destroy every meaningful thing, and. Over here in WA, the CEO, you've seen the article in the Perth Voice about the Red Ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
These valuable community symbols are not being promoted and respected enough. I mean, the City of Vincent's going to be spending $18,000, thanks to Lana. I mean, Lana has really jumped too and has, following up with the sisters' idea of getting the solar lighting and stopping the skateboarding, and they've got $18,000 they're going to be voting on. So the AIDS Council needs to really think about what value it's going to add to the the community and the things.
Well, obviously we need. I'd put out an invitation now for someone from the AIDS Council. If anyone's listening in, and they should be, because I've publicised it enough over your part of the world. If anyone from the AIDS Council is listening in, give us a call. Let us know what's happening with this quilt, and we can try and get this one sorted. Sister Mary Jane, we're going to have to leave it there. But thanks very much for joining us tonight. Bye.
Bye. Sister Mary Jane.
Bye.
Well, as you can tell, Sister Mary Jane is very passionate about this issue, and so he should be. Not the only one. There's a message here from Graham in Noble Park who said, "My God, I've added to the quilt. The bastard who didn't care about it ought to be shot." I don't know if we want to go quite that far. But Sister Mary Jane did touch on something that we have spoken about previously on this program, and that is the way that the powerhouse have got hold of most of it. The Powerhouse Museum in Sydney have got hold of most of the quilt, and we seem to have completely the opposite problem there.
Yeah, so what we're hearing out of WA is that the quilt has been laid on sodden ground during a previous function, and then it was rolled up and put back in a shed and became mouldy. What we're getting from the powerhouse is an absolute fear of letting their components of the quilt to come out and actually go on display for fear of it being damaged. Surely there is some kind of happy medium between destroying these things through overuse and preservation through hiding them away in vaults.
Yeah, we know that Victorian AIDS quilt is very well cared for because it's looked after by one of our Joy volunteers here.
It is, and it also comes out at appropriate
and
community.
It was properly displayed by being hung in a gallery when it came out here. So
not just thrown on the ground in a park.
Yes, which seems exceedingly strange. I mean, couldn't they at least have put a tarpaulin underneath it or something of the kind?
I find it odd that I think this is a case of thoughtlessness rather than any kind of malice, but we are talking about arguably the gay community's most important artifact. This quilt isn't just a quilt. It is the almost only public reminder of an entire generation wiped out by a pathogen.
Yeah, and it's the memorial. It's like, I don't know, the nearest equivalent it would be like blowing up a war memorial, the shrine or whatever.
Well,
it's our shrine of remembrance.
It's even worse than that because these people didn't choose to get HIV.
No.
So, you know, I mean, I'm a big supporter of our military, but I just think we need to... It shouldn't be this hard to both display and preserve these things simultaneously. Victoria can do it. Why can't Sydney? Why can't WA?
Yeah, we've got to find some way. I mean, I'm all in favour of having it in our community hands, because I think that's where it belongs, rather than in being some sterile in a museum environment where it is, you know, grandly titled some sort of cultural artifact and kept behind glass and brought out in dim light once every 5 years in case it fades. We don't want to go down that route. Which is more or less where the powerhouse have gone with it. But on the other hand, we don't want it being slung around like a picnic blanket.
Well, that seems to be what's going on here. I mean, we're able to do other national monuments, for example, Admiral Phillips' logs. We're able to keep them safe. Mm. The original Constitution of the original Constitution Act, which formed our country, we're able to keep these things on display permanently and available to community groups who want to review them and keep them for the future.
Yeah, we got another message in here from a listener. No name on it, but thanks for sending us your message. Goodness, such an important historical artefact. Get it away from these people. It's too important. This is an outrage. I'm pretty cross about this.
I'm sure that the AIDS Council of WA will come and present their side. They've just been unavailable for this week's show, but I'm sure they will talk to us later. But it isn't sounding good. There are just too many witnesses, and it sounds like something's gone terribly wrong. And this isn't the kind of thing you can just throw in the washing machine with some bleach. This is something far more valuable. It's going to cost a fortune to restore it.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And this is your host, Doug Pollard, assisted this evening by James Newbury. Now, many times in the past on this program, if you're a regular listener, we have talked about and to the Pinnacle Foundation, which helps young LGBTI students and others in need of assistance, because a great many of them, of course, you know, they wouldn't be able to progress their education without proper financing, and they're not always on good terms with their families. And for a variety of other reasons, their families might not be wealthy or whatever. Now, they've been mainly Sydney-based up to now, although they obviously do have Victorian students, but now they're starting a real push into Melbourne, and the man behind that push is in the studio with us now. His name is Bodan Abrat. Evening, Bodhi.
Hey, how are you? It's great to be on the show.
It's nice to have you back in the Joy Studio after all this time.
Indeed, it's been a few years. It has been a few years.
Now, first off, tell us a little bit about how things are going with the foundation at the moment.
Yeah.
Because you're really expanding, aren't you?
Well, it's as you pointed out, it's a wonderful organisation. Just to refresh you on what we do, we've got really two components. One of those components is the financing, the funding, the giving of scholarships to students for vocational purposes, so they mm-hmm. can buy their books, pay their tuition, and otherwise, you know, get along to get a bit of a kickstart in their university or other vocation. Mm-hmm. The second component is a mentoring component, and we try and match every scholar that we have, every student, with a mentor in a field that the student is interested in. And that program is going up in leaps and bounds and is becoming really, really successful. So they're the two components that we're looking at.
So how many students do you have on the books, so to speak, at the moment?
This year we gave out 13 new scholarships, 13 new students, and we had given out a range of scholarships last year. Eight of those students are still studying and have carried on into this year with a re-grant. So there's 21 currently on the books.
Right, so that's quite a rise in numbers.
That's right. So we started quite small. 3 years ago, we were looking at numbers of about six or seven.
Yeah.
That then increased, to a much large number. I think it was somewhere around 12 or 13 mm-hmm. Last year, and then this year up to 21, which is just great.
Where do you get the money from?
Well, that's a great question. we're a not for profit. We're a DGR. Organisation, mm-hmm. So we rely entirely on the goodness of people to donate money to us.
And because you're DGR, that means donations are tax deductible.
Deductible gift recipient status. Yes. That's right. So if you give over
$2, tax time coming up, people.
I love it. you can claim that donation back on tax.
Right, which must help quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but that's one of the things that that we are always looking to do, raise more money. One of our key goals in the next 5 years in our forward planning is to try and get enough money to hit a $5 million mark so that we would then have a sustainable quorum of funds mm-hmm. that would enable us effectively to exist perpetually to fund, you know, lots of students and great initiatives. But to be able to get to that point, there's a lot of work to be done. Mm. And that's why we've started up this Melbourne chapter, to try and tap into some of the Melbourne potential donors.
It sounds like a lot of raffle tickets to sell to raise money.
Right. And we actually don't... our fundraising strategy at the moment isn't one that involves raffles and the sorts of...
What about
of,
a bake sale then?
Yeah, that's right. We're not sort of at that level. What we're really trying to do... I think they're working
at a slightly higher level.
Is to really get into people's hearts and touch them. This is a really fantastic cause to be able to contribute to. So once we tap into the right networks of people, then, you know, we find that people are actually really giving and willing to donate money to us. We're also trying to tap into the corporate sector to try and, you know, fleece some of their earnings, if you like.
Well, you should be able to point to, you know, over time, you should be able to point to successful students who have made a contribution to industry and commerce, or even the law, as in your case, and say, look, you know, this is the sort of people we are helping and we are turning out, and don't you want people like these in your organisation?
Absolutely. And, you know, that is something that we actually discussed. We had a board meeting last night of Pinnacle Foundation and discussed the types of people that are getting scholarships. And strategically, you know, we need to be really you know, forward-thinking in the way that we do award those scholarships.
What's the demand like?
Well, it's growing. It's growing really quickly. So we had a lot of applicants last year, and we've got a committee of people that go through every single applicant, interview each applicant on a face-to-face basis. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, but ultimately not everyone can be successful.
So how can one volunteer and help your organisation out with time, which might even be more valuable than money?
Yeah, absolutely. So if anyone isn't able to donate money, which is one of the things obviously we're looking to do, they can donate their time either by putting themselves forward as a potential mentor and putting themselves into the database for that mentoring role. We do require quite a bit of information about those people.
Yeah, you really do. I looked at it last night. And have you looked at streamlining that process? I have a federal security clearance for my work, and that was less paperwork. You know, I'm just concerned there that the website's process could be causing a bit of
it could be prohibitive, but the reason for that is that we've got people in a mentoring capacity, often mentoring people who are disadvantaged or may have some mental issues, that there are people that we just have to be extremely careful about the way that those people interact, because, you know, this is one, our reputation on the line, and two, we just can't get into you know, any sorts of issues where there might be any accusations about the quality of the mentors.
Oh, sure.
Would that also be, I'm trying to put this in the most delicate way I can think of putting it, but is it because you are a GLBTIQ organisation that you have to be extra careful?
Well, it's really interesting, and I didn't mean to be as rude as that, but I think that there is a presumption in the community that...
That's what I was wondering about, that it's a you want to be sure that none of that is going to be thrown your way. Which is very important.
That's right. And I think that the backlash that can happen in relation to LGBTI issues can be so much more severe in a media context. You know, media
well,
can,
I'm going to say it only takes one tabloid to blow up a story out of very little, and it could undo a lot of your good work, couldn't
it? All of it, potentially, that's right.
Now, you said the demand is growing and very great. Is it uniform across Australia, or is it concentrated just in the major cities, or where's it coming from?
We've actually got scholars from all over the country. Perth, Adelaide, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne. And, you know, we are trying to tap into the non-metropolitan areas, if you like. So we are getting applications from all around Australia. It is difficult to reach some of the rural areas in Australia just because we don't quite have the networks. And again, that's why we're trying to set up state-based subcommittees that help with decentralising, if you like, the effort away from Sydney.
Yeah, because at the moment you are pretty Sydney-centric.
Yeah, and
you've had a presence here in Melbourne. Mm. I've been to launches that you've held here in Melbourne, and you've got Victorian scholars. But the head of the octopus, as it were, is still in Sydney, is it not? Now
that's right.
Are you going to be a more distributed organisation once this change has gone through?
Yeah, it takes a little while to implement. We have got strategies, as I said, in Adelaide. We've got strategies in Brisbane to set up regional committees, and the Melbourne Regional Committee has now actually been set up and has started to meet, which is a great thing. We're also looking at tapping into the Tasmanian population as well.
What sort of people have you got on your committee? What kind of range of industries and so on do they represent?
So there's me, who's in the law. We've got someone who's in the banking sector. We've got a retiree who was in science, and we've got someone who specialises at the moment in marketing. So we've got a range of people mm-hmm. coming together with different experiences so that we can leverage those qualities and be able to get the best outcomes.
And is that typical of the kind of people who are on the board generally across the organisation?
The board's quite a small board of people, and that involves the initial founder, myself, and two other people who are, mm-hmm. I guess you would say, quite experienced in matters of corporate governance. So the board does that, and then the management, who are all volunteers, I might add, do come from a wide background. Again, marketing, corporate mm-hmm. governance, finance, accounting, those types of backgrounds.
We're talking with Bodan Abrat of the Pinnacle Foundation, which is ramping up its involvement in Melbourne. And as part of doing that, they're planning on some events, are you not?
Yes, we are. So as I mentioned just before the break, we have started the Melbourne chapter, a Melbourne committee who's tasked really with getting the Pinnacle brand out within Melbourne, as well as trying to tap into and attract donations to keep the Pinnacle Foundation away from being so Sydney reliant. Mm-hmm. One of the strategies that we've got for that is to host an event, which will be a gala event, if you like, where we have a guest speaker that will come along. That guest speaker's yet to be named, but we're working on several very high-profile members of our community. And we would also have our scholars, some of our Melbourne-based scholars, come and mm-hmm. talk to that event. And we're looking at hosting it in the city. And it would be a nighttime event with a networking component that would be attached to it.
Yeah. Are you going to sort of look to invite people like Robert Doyle, the Lord Mayor of the city, to get involved?
Invite list isn't yet finalised, but we would certainly be looking at having some very high-profile guests who are supporters of the community, as I know Robert has been.
Yeah, well, he's one of the many who's kind of had a bit of a turnaround in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is now quite supportive of our community. Jeff Kennett is another one who's come on board much more. Neil Mitchell. There's lots of people who I'm sure would love the chance to help out with something like this if you ask them.
That's right.
And they may not be members of our community, but I don't think we can afford to be that choosy.
Allies are almost more important because they outnumber us.
Well, there is that, yes. So you're saying some sort of gala event, so that you're thinking of something quite glossy.
Well, this one probably won't be as gala as the second event that that we're looking at supporting. The second event is touted to be a black tie ball,
right?
Which would be much smaller numbers, invite only type, type thing. And there's two chaps that I've been working with that are producing this particular event, which would have a donation component, it may well be that the Pinnacle Foundation is the recipient of most of those donations, if not all.
Oh, you want to talk to some people in the Liberal Party? They've been charging people $10,000 a plate to go to dinner with them. Sure, you could run up something similar.
I don't think ours will be anywhere near that, Doug. you know, I don't think any of us are quite at that level yet. And, you know, to get these things off the ground, I think you've got to start small.
Of course. I was joking.
We are grassroots.
I don't think you can rule out the Lamington Drive. People love Lamingtons.
That's true. I don't know how personally to cook Lamingtons, though. So,
I'll teach you. It'll be fun.
Can you?
That'd
be great. Well, we'll put that onto the agenda of the Melbourne chapter and start working on that, James. That'd
excellent, excellent.
Now, what else are you planning as part of this push into Melbourne? Are you going to be approaching businesses here and for support and funding?
Absolutely. So the strategy that we've got at the moment is to identify high net worth individuals. Try and work out how we have contact and network into those people, and then sit down and just have coffee. We'll just have conversations with them. Mm. And I think once you introduce the concept of the Pinnacle Foundation, those people then, their eyes sometimes light up. Often they're looking for interesting causes to be able to support. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's sort of the starting point for us. If they then have connections into small businesses or larger businesses mm-hmm. within mm-hmm. Melbourne, then absolutely we're looking to those corporates to assist us with donations as well.
Well, I think it's very important that you have well-known and, shall we say, you project a high standard of integrity because, I hate to say it, but in the past there have been gay organisations in this city who have soaked up a lot of community money one way and another and not delivered very much for the community in return, and there's a certain wariness, I think, as a result there. So I think if you have a system of proven integrity and some good solid names there with good solid resumes, you'll do very well.
Well, we're acutely aware of that, and our two patrons, again, that are Sydney based, and we're looking to bring some Melbourne supporters on board, Justice Michael Kirby and mm-hmm. And Karen Phelps, two upstanding names in the community. And the other thing that I would say to that, Doug, is that we do have a very sound investment policy, and that investment policy is actually available up on our website. So if people are concerned about where their money might be going if they give money, that policy clearly sets out the way in which we are going to deal with your money, how we're going to hold it, how we're going to spend it.
I think that kind of transparency is absolutely essential in order to get what you need.
Absolutely.
And I do hope you get it, because I do think the work you do is amazing, and it would be good to see many more students being able to access a scholarship. I just wanted to touch briefly on, I mentioned in my introduction about the reasons why kids come to you for scholarships. I do know with your American branch, you're
the Point Foundation.
One would almost call you a franchise, not quite, of the American original. I know there a lot of their students are looking for financial support because they have fallen foul of their families through coming out as gay or lesbian or bi or trans or whatever. Is that true of some of your students?
Absolutely, and that's a core to the population of scholars that we have had in the past. Sometimes it even gets down to the unfortunate circumstance where those scholars have been abused as a result of their sexuality or their gender identity.
Yeah. So it's, but the great thing about what you do is it's not just giving them a handout; it's actually helping them build a whole life.
That's right. And so, again, with the mentoring, we try and match those scholars with a mentor who is going to be appropriate for them. Sometimes that might be someone who's been through gender reassignment or who may be living by themselves in LGBT environment in the community, might be studying the same things that the student is studying. Yeah. And so that's why having those mentors to be able to match with the students is so important, to take them on a new life journey that they couldn't have gone on with their parents.
And that is also why it's very important to vet your mentors very carefully.
Yeah.
Because you are dealing with people who are vulnerable.
Absolutely. And some of the most vulnerable people you've seen, if you actually went onto our website, which I know that you can access via the Joy website, Doug, there are experiences and personal experiences sure. from the students there that you can have a look at, and they're really moving.
Yeah, well, as I have often said in the past, and I will say again, links to anything we talk about on the show tonight are on the programme blog, which now lives at joy.org.au/rainbow report. But you also have your own website, which is pinnaclefoundation.org as well. So you can go there directly. So you can go via Joy, or you can go directly to that website. Well, thanks for that, Bodan. I'm really pleased that you're getting off the ground here in Melbourne. And I know we're going to be talking about it a lot more here on Joy 94.9 in future.
Always look forward to coming on to Joy to talk to you with this fantastic show that you've put together and James with you producing now.
Oh, look, and I'm looking forward to coming and teaching you how to make lamingtons. They're one of the most amazing things ever.
Okay, stay with us, Bodan, because I want to go to a message we've just had. It's quite a long one. Earlier on, we were talking about the AIDS quilt in WA, which appears to have become damaged through having been badly handled and not taken proper care of. This is from one of our Joy members, Brad. He says, if the allegations of mistreatment of the WA section of the quilt are true, it's a tragic loss of our history and shows utter disrespect by those charged with the storage and protection of this true archival part of our history. Those particularly in the early years who gave their lives through the tragedy of a previously unknown illness, the hours of love and dedication of parents, friends and lovers creating a lasting memorial lost due to the carelessness of a few. You're right, WAC probably will have something to say within time. However, if there was no truth to these claims, then you could bet your pink dollar they'd be screaming out their case now to shoot down the rumours before they flame up into a proverbial inferno of public opinion. As for our diggers on Anzac Day, let's share the same sentiment for the unknowing front line who fought their hardest to fight off this virus. You were the fighters for our community in a very true sense and should never be forgotten, lest we forget those who have gone before.
I really
can't add anything to that.
Look, Brad, I promise you,
we will get
to the bottom of this. We're going to find out what's going on, and we will definitely have some updates for you concerning the AIDS quilt in WA.
It's tragic when things like this happen because the AIDS quilt is more than just a piece of history. It, as I said before, it's also like our Anzac Memorial.
It's more important than that. It to me, I've explained in the past my experience of being in the same room with it. It moves me to a place where I think about not just the lost lives and the people who died, but the lost potential. It reminds me of the oppression that we've been through. It reminds me of where we're going.
Yeah. And thank goodness we now have organisations like the Pinnacle Foundation who are actually preventing the loss of potential and
exactly.
developing that potential instead.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.